small section of the exposed track for the metro. The property is currently developed with a golf driving range under a special exception, and it has, or had until just recently, certain parking for WMATA, which I understand is now in the process of being constructed into a WMATA garage. There's also an existing stormwater management facility that serves the special exception use and another existing stormwater management facility in the southeast corner of the property. There have been several prior approvals for this site. They include the approval of the rezoning from R90 to the TSM zone, which was done in 2003, and that included a development plan with finding elements. The conditions of that approval have been incorporated into the approval of the preliminary plan. That's per condition number two. There was also a pre-preliminary plan which was approved per section 5033A, which included binding elements and asked the board to rule on the adequacy of school facilities and road and public transportation facilities, which was done in 2003, and the conditions for that approval are also included in part of condition 13 in the approval of the preliminary plan. There was also a mandatory referral, which the board just recently reviewed for the WMATA garage that I mentioned on this property. The proposed preliminary plan consists of 9 lots and 2 parcels. It includes a network of public and private streets which serve those lots. The current configuration would place the residential uses on the lots at the eastern side of the site and the commercial office and a lot of the retail on the remaining 4 proposed lots. The proposal includes an urban amenity space of at least 1 acre in size in the middle of the site, which is incorporated into one of the lots. It also has 2 parcels, as I mentioned, one which is a proposed open space parcel within the residential area, and the second parcel includes stormwater management. This is also the part of the site which is zoned I-1. It will be used for stormwater management for the site. This plan does provide the master plan recommended mix of uses and a significant residential component, which is close to transit as recommended by the master plan. The site currently has existing forest that remains in the urban amenity space and some of the rear of the property that wasn't included in the original special exception. The requirements for environmental and for forest conservation will be met on this site in small part by saving the on-site tree stand, mostly by going off-site and planting approximately 7 acres of forest to compensate for the loss of forest on the site. A big part of the review of this plan at pre-preliminary and also the preliminary plan has been the transportation review, and I want to ask Ron Welke, who's here with me, to kind of briefly go through what the components or elements of that review were.
For the record, on the record, Ron Welke in transportation planning. Just a couple of brief comments. As Kathy mentioned, APF has been addressed at pre-preliminary plan, has been approved by the board, so that is not an issue for discussion tonight. The primary transportation issue tonight has to do with the road network. From the start, transportation planning staff advocated a public street system. Through negotiations and discussion, I'm glad to report that we have at this point consensus between the applicant, DPWT, and park and planning staff that the streets serving the commercial area will all be public. The streets east of Citadel, which serve the residential area, Steve's pointing those out, have been agreed to be private streets serving the high-rise apartment area. I will point out probably the biggest point of discussion was what we call Bridge Street, which is between Rock Hill Pike and Station Street. It does cross the WMATA tracks. There was quite a discussion about who would be responsible ultimately for maintenance of that road, since it does go literally over Metro on a bridge. DPWT has agreed to maintain that street as a public street. We still have some issues with regard to its intersection with Station Street and how that intersection is going to be controlled, so we can assure that there's no backup of traffic onto 355. This is considered a very important access to the site, in that literally all of the retail will be along Main Street, which is the spine street going into the development. So we, DPWT, and the applicant all feel strongly that that connection should be there. The other thing I just want to mention and enter into the record is that in our report, and it's not part of the conditions, but I just want to put on the record, there is a table describing the rights of way and cross sections of all of the streets within the public streets within the development. We did make a correction to that table, and I just want to indicate in terms of right of way and width of roads, everything is pretty well set. There is still some work to be done, and we can bring that back at site plan with regard to the actual use of the streets with regard to on-street parking. So I think that pretty much concludes my comments at this time.
Staff does find that the proposed preliminary plan meets the requirements of Chapter 50 and Chapter 59, and we are recommending approval. And before the hearing, or before we started, I passed out a set of revised conditions to you. The revisions include, first off, the inclusion of a waiver. 50-26A4 does specify that the right-of-way width for business district streets, which are included, all the public roads in this plan are business district streets. Our subdivision regulations specify that that's an 80-foot right-of-way. Chapter 49, the road code, does provide for a 70-foot business district street, and in fact it has been approved on other plans, but technically because 5026A4 specifies 80 feet, we do need to waive the requirement in this case and allow for 70-foot right-of-ways, which are called for by staff. So that's the first change to the proposed conditions. The rest of the conditions on the first page are primarily standard conditions. On the second page in condition 13, A3C of 13 is a restatement of the pre-preliminary plan conditions. They come from the opinion for the pre-preliminary plan approval, and there was a mistake made in that opinion. It references the FY04 annual growth policy for the alternative review procedures for the roads, and it should have referenced the FY02. And you do have a copy of a letter from the applicant requesting that change be made to the binding elements of the pre-preliminary plan.
May I ask whether or not we can eliminate the 4, because it says fiscal year 24.
It's actually the way that the cross out
comes up.
It really is. It just happens to follow mostly the cross of the 4, but it has been changed that way in the document.
Okay.
On the next page, two other transportation planning conditions have been modified. Condition 13E has been modified to reflect the language for the business district street so that it matches the waiver that we're asking you to grant. And there is also a specific provision that's been added that would allow the PUEs to be located within the right-of-way. Right now, staff is recommending at the request of DPWT that they be located outside of public right-of-ways, but this change to the condition would allow DPWT to change their mind at site plan and not have to come back and modify this condition.
In 13G, items 1 and 2 have been amended, and this is to specify that certain approvals by SHA, sorry, State Highway Administration and WMATA, need to be obtained as part of the site plan review for this plan, and so the language has been modified so that instead of coordinate
with that in front of it, we can.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't think we need to go through them all.
Okay. And
that concludes
concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Elmendorf.
Thank you, Chairman Balazs. My name is Steve Elmendorf, law firm of Lunith & Blocker. To my left is Mike Smith with Elcor. To my right is John Brundage with Loiterman Associates, the engineers on the project. We really don't have much to say. We had gotten an advanced copy of the conditions from Ms. Conlon and are in agreement with those changes. Just so you understand sort of procedurally, I guess, where we are, there was an issue raised, I believe, in Ms. Goldberg's letter about the daycare center. We are certainly still committed to doing that, but this is a preliminary plan. Even if that was an issue, we wouldn't be showing you things like that, specific amenities and whatever, until we come in for site plan, which, of course, is the next step down the line. And we are through APF, and we're just sort of doing, the non-APF portion of the preliminary plan tonight. There was one other letter in the file. I don't know whether the gentleman is here going to speak about asking for access through, if I may approach the...
Sure.
Again, I'm not going to belabor the point, but since there was an issue raised in the letter requesting, there's the property owner who lives here, which is an I-1 piece of property, has never been owned by WMATA, has wanted to have pedestrian access, I guess, the way I'm reading it, directly into the site here, or pedestrian and or vehicular access. Well, there is pedestrian access from along Neville Street into the site, just a little further up the street here. And this is our residential component, and we certainly did not want to have I-1 type uses. Sort of, even if physically you could do it, and there's a dramatic change in grade from here down to here, but we did not want I-1 type traffic coming through the residential component. But with this grid system, it's kind of, I don't think anybody could complain that there is not, from almost any direction, adequate vehicular and pedestrian connections. I mean, we've gone from literally nothing, just a solid block, to four connections north and south and two east and west. So I did want to address that point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have one speaker, Natalie Goldberg.
Chairman Belange, members of the Planning Board, my name is Natalie Goldberg. I'm speaking for Garrett Park Estates, Whitefront Park Citizens Association. To begin, the September 24th memo from Transportation Planning, Appendix A. This appendix provides six intersections identified in the traffic study where CLV values exceed the CLV congestion standard. Rockville Pike and Nicholson Lane is omitted from this list and incorrectly placed in the list, Circle 34, of CLV values that did not exceed their congestion standards. However, the amended traffic study shows Rockville Pike and Nicholson Lane with a PM CLV of 1931 versus an 1800 standard, unless one of two improvements recommended by the traffic study is implemented. This intersection information should be updated, especially for the state project planning priority list. I'd like to thank you for sending TPR members a copy of the Annual Development and Congestion ADAP report. It was a well-done study, and I hope that the Planning Board and also the Council will consider the findings of this report as it considers this pending development. What this report says about Rockville Pike and the Whitefront Metro Policy Area is relevant to the preliminary plan being considered today. We know from your report that Rockville Pike, especially the commercial corridor in North Bethesda, is like any other place in the county, that the measured congestion during peak hours is but a small indication of the continuous traffic congestion during daytimes, Friday nights, and Saturday afternoons. While this project is, quote, passing, unquote, traffic mitigation based on the alternative review policy, the impact of the 2,300 unmitigated rush hour trips, as well as the corresponding increase in vehicular traffic at all other times, should be a factor in the design of this project. We believe that the orientation of this project affects the routes that people take to get there, and that to some extent the convenience of driving is balanced against the effect of taking Metro. It is in the interest of the community to discourage use of Rockville Pike and encourage the use of alternative routes such as Neville Street. The Saturday afternoon shopper and the evening theater goer should have options for how to get to this development, and the most favorable options should not include Rockville Pike. There are two points in the preliminary plan that we take issue with. One, construction of new vehicular access from Rockville Pike, and two, providing only private road access to Neville Street. Our Citizen Association believes it's contrary to smart growth principles to construct new vehicular access from Rockville Pike, access that leads directly onto the commercial main street. While the development plan states as a binding element that this decision is reserved for site plan, it appears that development of Bridge Street is an integral part of this preliminary plan. We would support Bridge Street as a pedestrian road, but the new vehicular access, which is contrary to the master plan, only encourages more use of Rockville Pike. We believe that Bridge Street will slow passing traffic on Rockville Pike because of the additional turning movement as well as the additional volume, and that these turning movements will create unsafe conditions at Bridge Street for the many pedestrians now walking along the east side of Rockville Pike. While the master plan removed Bridge Street from the plan in 1996, the master plan retained support for connecting Main Street eastward to Neville Street. We are disturbed that the only direct access to Neville Street for this development is via a private road. A public connection would encourage use of Neville as an alternative to Rockville Pike. The transportation planning memo identifies nearby transportation projects, but fails to mention Neville Street Extended, a project which will facilitate travel between this development, Montrose Crossing, and points further north. Given the county support of Neville Street Extended, the master plan endorsement for a connection to Neville, and the traffic conditions on Rockville Pike, it seems only prudent to use Neville Street as an alternative to Rockville Pike. In conclusion, Garrett Park Estates White Point Park Citizens Association is extremely concerned with the traffic impact from this North Bethesda Town Center, especially on Rockville Pike, especially during midweek and weekend non-rush hours. We believe that our mobility is being constrained by the existing traffic, and we ask your support to minimize the impact of this additional development. Thank you for hearing our concerns.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just one, Natalie. I didn't understand exactly the connection you were making reference to. You said to Neville Street. You said that the only way to get to Neville Street is through a private road.
Right, from this development. I want to point it out.
Yeah.
It is. Yes, the circle is private, and these two roads are private. This is Neville Street.
Right, and it's only that one private road that actually gets
directly to Neville. There's private access. This is public out to Old Georgetown and then to...
I guess the challenge is, why is that an issue if, in fact, what you're trying to do is make the access available for the people who are going to live there, because you don't want cut-through traffic, per se, because...
No, I'm like to encourage the people that are shopping there or that are working there, if they're driving, to go out to Neville Street and use Neville Street Extended to go further north, rather than using Rockville Pike.
Got you. Okay. Okay. I see what you mean. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Natalie. Mr. Almendorf, any rebuttal?
Yes, I wanted to clarify something. When the word was used by Ms. Conlon that it's going to be a private road as a public road, that really only relates to who's going to be taking care of it. Yes. I mean, it is built to public road standards. It will be the public will have access to it, but it's going to be a road that the elderly will be responsible for snow removal, taking care of, all the patchwork and all of that. So that, I mean, that will look like a dock and walk like a dock as a public road.
Gotcha.
The other issue on Bridge Street, I would remind the planning board, it was specifically found by the transportation staff during the zoning case that having that connection there will actually will help the traffic for the intersection to the north, because you won't have the cars that want to make that right turn won't have to go up necessarily to the next intersection. They'll be getting off Rockville Pike sooner. So I guess I would disagree with Ms. Goldberg that it's going to be a traffic hindrance. I think it will be a traffic help to be able to, rather than force that traffic to go to the extra half block, they'll be able to make the right off there.
Is there any stacking lane of cars?
Yes, one of the conditions. First it's just right in, right out. That there's no connection across. And one of the conditions requires L-course construction of a D-cell, Axel lane at that point as well. In fact, he's not here, accurately portray his position. Howard Benn, who runs the ride on bus system, is very interested in that connection, because that's where they want the bus. They don't want the buses to even have to go that extra three quarters, block, and they want to be able to make that turn to come into the station there.
Now, is the road wide enough to come away? You could go in High Bridge Street and exit Neva in a bus.
Can
a bus get through and go around that circle and go around that?
Yes.
But sometime it came apart. You know how they've got the smaller ride-ons now? So wouldn't the full-size bus would be bigger than...
I mean, I don't think ride-ons in this plane right now is too... within the site, but all the roads are built to public standards to allow them to do that.
And to the street that goes from level 2A...
Yes, it is.
Park
Street. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have two questions. The first is in terms of the open space and the urban amenity. In connection with Bethesda CBD, recently we've had a lot of discussion about amenities and open space and whether they really are serving the community in the way that they were intended. And I don't know how familiar you all are with those discussions. They've mostly involved John Carter and others. But, the contention that's made by many in the downtown Bethesda community is a lot of this open space ends up not being very useful to the public. It wasn't really thought out. In many cases, even though it's a public amenity, it doesn't look public, so the public doesn't really even feel like they can walk in and use it. They're confused about whether it's public or private space. And so, given the size of this project and the size of the amenities, I'd like some assurance that you all have thought that through and that you believe that these amenities and open spaces will be truly useful to the community and will appear welcoming to the community.
We have looked at the location of both the amenity space and the open space. They both have public roads frontage. In the case of the urban amenity space, it is fronting the public roads on two sides. It will be maintained as a Category 2 easement to protect the large trees there, but will provide for access points from the sidewalks up into the area. It will be, at least the concept, and I'll let the applicants speak more to this if they want to, is for it to be surrounded by the restaurant area in the retail section, so it will be accessible from that side as well to the community. And the public open space in the residential area is in the center of the loop right now. That has not been fleshed out as to what is going to be included in there or how it would be designed. It will be a part of site plan, but in terms of its accessibility and that it can be obviously identified as a public space, we think it is located in a way that should provide that.
Sure, I'm
Dorf, you might. I didn't really have much to add, but because the description was correct. This is not going to look like, I know some of you was big urban.
You know what I'm talking about.
It looks like you're in the courtyard of a building.
Exactly.
And you're in there, you don't feel comfortable. This, both of these, will be tree savior. What I'm referring to as the tree savior, so that's what we sort of learned about it. That has frontage along two of its sides. The other side is actually going to be, hopefully, and it won't be surrounded by sort of a restaurant
building or pavilion where you could have outdoor seating that would look out onto that as well. But it will be total open space in terms of anybody just walking down, I guess.
I'm trying to add exactly.
And that's the other space that's just labeled open space, and Kathy, if you could point to that. Again, we haven't fleshed out all of the potential uses there, but we see that as sort of a community space where for the residential community or even the broader Wakefront Town Center community, events can be held there. But again, it's right now.
So that kind of underlies my point, is that I think it's great if the residents of your residential community use that space, but I don't want it to be just for them. It's open space. It needs to be designed in a way that everyone feels invited. And I think I can just leave it by saying I will ask these questions again at site plan, so please give some careful thought, both you and the staff, to that issue.
It's a
very good project, and this open space needs to be a public amenity, public amenity, truly useful to the community.
That's how we have seen it. We have heard you loud and clear, I guess, through the zoning case, that the amenity package in generic terms is very important here, and these are two very critical elements of that outdoor amenity package. That this is not just going to be a courtyard between two high-rise office buildings or two apartment buildings.
Okay.
And just to follow up on that, because that also interests me, the part where there's the restaurant tables, are there going to be tables that say you had a sandwich or you went shopping with your kids or something, and you have food that you could just, without going to the restaurant, use the tables or benches and things like that to make a tour public?
And this will be on the same level as the tree save area, and with the category 2 easement as opposed to category 1, we will be able to make that area much more user friendly. It won't just be an area that's allowed to grow in, so that we will be able to put pathways in there, maybe some benches for people to be able to sit, as opposed to the category 1, which was the original thought, which would have just sort of let it grow back into its natural state. You're getting into details that.
Well, I know, but I know, like, in the closure, there's an open space. I can't remember the exact name of the restaurant, Wisconsin, but it's supposed to be an open courtyard when it became a restaurant. I didn't realize it was public space until John Carter told me. And I thought I couldn't go up there and maybe sit at the table and say I'd had that sandwich in a bag or something. So even though we're getting into detail now, if it looks as if all those tables belong to the restaurant and there's no sort of public seating, people are very polite about those things. They're not going to just go sit at it. And so I think you need a way to distinguish that, and Kathy, I'm sure you'll be checking out. And then the center open space that's in the loop there, how large is that?
It's scale.
I
don't know if it
I mean, is it big enough to have like a rock band and people sitting on a grass and that kind of thing?
Other than a rock band.
By
100 feet. 300 by
100. Oh, okay. Yeah. So it is really big.
It is
Frisbees and.
Yeah.
You may know what Frisbees is.
I like Frisbees.
Okay.
They're favorite Frisbees in the project.
It would be a one piece band, something like that. But in other words, it is large enough that people actually do some activity.
We haven't begun the programming discussions internally about it, but we're very excited about a combination of ideas that some folks have already presented to us. And
looking at better neighborhoods.
Bring us that aside.
And then my last question would be about the daycare center. That's coming to us at site plan, but who is going to be able to use it?
As we see it now, it's a combination of users, both those folks who are on site, office space, residential space on site. It'll also be open to outside parties, so families who live in the broader neighborhood would be able to utilize it. Commuters at the metro station would be able to utilize it.
So the public daycare center.
And it's not sized yet, but it's a pretty substantial component of the project, and we've got, a pretty interesting location for it.
Well, I mean, size is going to be really important. How many kids do you think that you'll be able to take?
Not sure yet, because we just haven't gone through the metrics about how large the footprint's going to be and how many square feet you need per child, but it'll be a fairly substantial facility.
There are some regulations about how big it is under there.
Right, I remember all that. Okay.
When you say public in the sense that it will not be something that is just confined to, say, a particular employer's employees, but it will be a privately operated.
I understand that.
You have to show up at the door. You have to
register. But if they neighbors who live in those single family homes and people who have the city.
It's been our sense already that demand is going to be
a real big demand.
So
huge.
Yeah, it will be a huge demand.
So that's a true amenity, and I'll be looking to see the size of it and hear the details of the plan.
Good.
Okay. Moving to a different issue. Transportation. The intersection of Neville Street and Nicholson Road, Nicholson Lane, I just happen to know because I use it a lot, and the PM peak fails every single day. Now, I know that this applicant is using alternative review, but are there any plans to improve that intersection that you know of? Maybe even Neville Street Extended gets built?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know if you know of any. I'm not aware of any plans to change that intersection over what it is today.
Mr. Belag, one of the parts of the alternate review procedure calls for a comprehensive intersection analysis to be done. At the beginning, it didn't say who did it, but we did it and gave it to your staff so that you can then based on the results of that intersection, make recommendations to the council about possible CIC projects. Also with the understanding of the hope that impact fees that would be generated from this type of development could possibly be used to fund those improvements.
Well, do me a favor, before we move town. Are you leaving town tomorrow? All right, yeah, let me see that a week. Pull out that report and take a look at that particular intersection and let me know what it says, and I might want to pursue it.
Yeah.
I don't like to make decisions on the basis of personal experience or anecdotal experience, but sometimes there are little places that nobody really, they're not big enough for anybody to pay attention to, where you have a significant traffic congestion problem. It's clearly the PM peak, it's traffic that's turning left from Neville onto Nicholson, and it stacks up so far down that people have to go through 2 or 3 cycles, and I don't know if anyone's done anything about that, and maybe we could.
Yeah,
take a look at it.
I've asked Ed in my stead to take a look at that.
Okay, passing the baton already. Very well. John?
Just for the record, I'd like to ask our council to respond to something that Natalie Goldberg said. Is this when there's an application for amendment to the zoning ordinance map and the county council approves it, that's the day that is in fact an amendment to the sector plan, is it not?
Excuse me, Tarek Obama with legal staff. Your question again was an amendment to...
It amends the sector plan?
Yes, the sector plan is an amendment to the general plan.
Right. But here we had an amendment to the zoning ordinance map. This is the zoning application is for the reclassification of R90 zone to the TSM zone, and then there's a whole bunch of conditions, and there's things that have to be done. So that action by the county council amends the relative sector plan. So that is not.
That is correct. Yeah.
So if the sector plan used to say X, and after this action it says Y, the council's amended it to be one.
That would be correct.
Thank you. Motion's on order.
Move approval of the staff recommendations as modified by the revised conditions.
Second by the vice chair. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Preliminary plan is approved. I understand Mr. Welke wants to say something before we go to the next item.
Is that
true?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it does not involve you, so I am.
We all took a breath. Yeah, with the indulgence of the audience, I'd like to take a couple minutes off the record to just say a couple kind personal words to each of our planning board commissioners. Look out. This is my last day, and I'm not sure why Rick had to schedule an evening item on my last day, but nonetheless he did, and so
every minute
diligent public servant that I am here, but
I do want to say it's been an extreme pleasure to work with each of you throughout my past 8 years here at the Planning Commission. I told our group at my going away event on Tuesday, this is my extended family, and you all are included in that. And I did want to leave each of you a little token of remembrance of me in transportation. Commissioner Robinson, you started out like a bull in a china closet, if you recall that first infamous day you were here.
What do you mean started out?
Well, he's so mild now.
I made that remark to Allison tonight. I'm just the same guy that I've just become mellowed as yeah, we're about.
He's mellowed over the past couple years. And he truly has been, I think, a strong advocate of transportation. In particular, he takes a great deal of interest in things like the TPR and the ADAC and Purple Line. And I know he has spent a lot of time with Rick one-on-one just trying to understand and be able to support projects related to transportation. So, John, I'd like to leave you a memento that I have had since 1984. It commemorates the opening of the Red Line in Silver Spring.
That is truly very fun.
And Commissioner Wellington, you are obviously our protector of nature and the environment, and not the strongest supporter of transportation, but nonetheless, I think a balance that we need on the planning board. And I would leave with you a cup that has the symbol of nature on it, and that is butterflies.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Balazs, I commend you. First of all, we'll forgive the beard and we won't talk about that. I think it looks good on you. But you have truly, in my experience, compared with your predecessor, no offense to Bill, but run the commission meetings in a very orderly and expeditious manner. You do the best job I've ever seen of keeping projects and items on schedule. And what I'd like to leave with you is a little steamboat with paddles so that you can keep the ship running. Now, this is my favorite commission. I think, seriously, he and I have developed a great professional respect for each other over the years. He does not mind. I think he relishes saying, oh, he's out there, I've got a question for him. And hopefully most of the time I've been able to answer his questions.
You have.
But I truly have. He's become kind of a friend, a buddy. But I respect him greatly as a commissioner. One thing, I noticed lately, you're driving this big black car. I'm not sure what the significance is, but my memory of
I'm a big black man.
My memory of you is the car that you used to drive. So what I want to leave with you is a convertible.
Oh,
okay, that's truly how I remember you.
That's right. Listen, this is your way.
Thank you very much.
And then finally, Commissioner Perdue, the strong, quiet one. Ms. Perdue, at church, they often refer to me as the E.F. Hutton of our church. I don't say a lot, but when I have something to say, usually most people listen. And that's truly how I see you. I mean, an example is tonight. You sat like you often do and listened, and often ask very perceptive questions. I think you, again, bring a great balance. I think you're a supporter of transportation. You're also a supporter of good development, environmentally sound and safe development. So I want to leave you a transportation item, but it is something like you can plant a flower in so that you can maintain that balance. Unfortunately, I have to hang around here for one more item, so...
Well, we're going to applaud your tenure anyway.
Thank you very much, Ron. That's very, very thoughtful, Ron. You know you set a standard now.
That's right.
Rick. And Rick.
Item number 7, extension of a preliminary plan review for Kevin John Park.
For the record, my name is Kathy Conlon with the Development Review Division. The Kevin John Park site is located on the south side of MacArthur Boulevard between 79th Street and 78th Street. This was a re-subdivision plan which came to the board requesting reconfiguration of an existing lot and a part of a lot for two houses which were existing on both. So the original subdivision didn't require new construction, just reconfiguration of the lots. It was conditioned on replatting with a open space that would be was to be placed in a conservation easement between the two resulting lots. The applicant, as you have read in his letter, is requesting an extension of 24 months, and staff is recommending extension of 12 months. We believe
okay.
That
this is a simple extension, so there's no need to debate it unless you need to.
Second.
Mr. Connors is here representing the applicant for the record. May we proceed?
You may. I only wish, since the staff and I are in only disagreement as to the amount of time of the extension.
Oh, you are in disagreement. Okay. Yes. Any way to speak.
But we had requested 2 years because of the difficulty we've had up to now in trying to get things done. We feel we're very close, but even once we get to that point and we have to revise your standard conservation easement, we have to review stream restoration plan along with that and incorporate that into the easement. We have to run that through the legal department. Most importantly, we have to get the two lenders for these existing homes to sign off on the plat as well as the two owners, and to sign off on a plat that is going to be adding an easement to each of the properties, which they may feel impairs the value of the property. And so we expect to have to do a little bit of work with them to try to help them understand it, as well as just the normal delay that lenders take. And since they are not, this is not a development situation where the lender is looking at a future development to be the collateral for their loan. It's an existing home in each case. We feel that may take a little bit more time. So, and once we even get to that point, it takes 3 months at least to physically get the plat signed by all of the agencies and recorded. So we felt that 2 years was appropriate on that basis.
And what's your reason for recommending 12 months?
We thought that 12 months would be a long enough time. There have been several calls since we noticed this extension from the neighbors who are concerned about seeing the easement get recorded, and we felt they have waited through the initial period, and that a year is reasonable to get this done.
If they can't do it in a year, can they get a second extension?
Yes.
The rules provide for that?
Correct.
Well, what's your pleasure?
A motion has already been made and seconded.
To move approval of staff recommendation?
I seconded it.
All right, the motion is to approve the staff recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously, extension for 12 months. Right. Maybe you can come back and ask for another one.
We'll hope not to do that, or not to need to do that. Thank you.
And extension of time for East Hampshire Center. The next one.
East Hampshire, with Kathy Conlon with Development Review. The East Hampshire site is located on the corner of New Hampshire Avenue and actually, I don't know the cross street. I just can't remember it. I'm sorry, Eastern Avenue. This was a C2 zone property which was approved for retail. They had a problem with the first applicant, Track Auto, on the site. They have been in litigation for most of the period, the validity period for their subdivision plan. They're asking for an extension. Now that they are out of litigation, they are ready to proceed and are asking for a 4-month extension. We are recommending 4 months.
The applicant present?
No. Okay. And there are no speakers. We do have a letter.
I'm sorry.
From Mr. Mizell. And since it's from Mr. Mizell, I can't help noting the last sentence. Included for your connivance is a copy of the
spell check.
That's the thing about spell check. It's not perfect.
Well, he's walking with a cleaner now.
He may not, that may not have been a spell check item.
He might have really meant that.
He may mean it's connivance.
Is there a motion to approve the staff recommendation?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Without connivance, the extension is granted. Number 9, preliminary plan review of Jared Park, Section 1.
Thank you. For the record, Richard Weaver, Development Review. This is a resubdivision, preliminary plan 104102, which you may recall seeing the pre-application on. We brought this to the planning board for their thoughts and wisdom on this rather irregularly shaped lot located on Kenilworth Avenue at Rockaby. This is the CSX transportation line, Schuylkill Road, across the railroad tracks. We did, again, brought this to you as a pre-application. In your deliberations, you did not object to the submission of a preliminary plan. I will note that we have gone through the review again. This does meet 5029B2. I will point out that there is one criteria of the resubdivision criteria with. I will note for you that the resulting lot here, which is an assemblage of a lot, a bunch of parts of lots, little bits and pieces that Mr. Siegel has picked up under common ownership, due to its location on the interior, the inside curve of this road, this will be the widest lot in the neighborhood. Therefore, we did not make the finding of a high correlation with respect to width, but we did make the finding that this width is not dissimilar. It is in character with the lots that we have defined in the neighborhood that you saw as the pre-application and with this application. So I will just state that for the record, but I think staff looked at this, found it very, given the fact that it was on the interior curve, we felt that it was certainly within the character realm of the defined neighborhood. With the conditions before you, we are suggesting that this is appropriate for approval.
Okay, gentlemen, please state your name for the record and tell us if you agree with our staff's recommendation.
I'm John Siegel, the property owner, and I do agree.
Rich Richardson, O'Connell and Lawrence, I agree.
Very good.
Move approval.
Second.
Second by Mr. Robinson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? By unanimous vote, the preliminary plan of the subdivision is approved with the conditions stated. Thank you. Pre-preliminary plan review of the Tapestry Project in Clarksburg.
Don't do a spell check.
Check it out.
Thank you.
I was wondering if, go ahead.
Item 10 is Tapestry. It is a pre-application. I prepared a brief staff memorandum for you just to focus the board's attention on some specific items. It is not a binding pre-application.
Now you're putting that in bold right up front. We like that.
This property is located at the intersection of Route 355 and West Old Baltimore Road, the entrance to Black Hill Regional Park, again down West Old Baltimore under 270, and to the left. It is being developed in the R200 zone. The request is for 89 lots. You will note that on one of our conditions is we're going to limit this to no more than 88 units based upon our calculations. It is coming into you under the MPDU option. The applicant is proposing a 15% of the units will be MPDUs. I'm going to orient this. South, north being off to the upper right. Again, Maryland Route 355, a relocated West Old Baltimore intersection here, and keeping the old road alignment through the remainder of the site. This is the early grade subdivision developed as a TDR property. Note Ruby Drive, located here, zoned R200. It is a 1960 era R200, 20,000 square foot lot subdivision. One of the things that we looked at was, considering this to be the entranceway into Clarksburg, we were concerned at first glance at some of the, I think you had proposed townhomes along Route 355. What we have done is managed to front a number of single-family detached homes and to locate some of the MPDUs along Route 355 to, again, maintain the more suburban entryway character into Clarksburg. The applicant's provided us here, although we're not really binding him to this. These are some of the MPDUs, what they would look like. These are, in fact, duplex units, or as we sometimes call them, semi-detached. So, again, we are maintaining the detached nature of into the entryway. If you
want, where are those names exactly on the map?
They are scattered here. We have one duplex here, 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 here. And on West Old Baltimore, we have two together right here on...
Okay.
Somewhat off of 355.
That's good integration. That kind of.
Okay.
So they don't stand out and disrupt. That's good.
Okay. I would like to go through the issues that we've identified here, and I'm going to add one here at the end. Again, we are limiting this, suggesting it's appropriate for no more than 88 units. Of course, the actual number of units would be determined at the time of site plan. The applicant has offered, well, let's back up. A couple weeks back, we saw a preliminary plan called Woodcrest. It was located in the northern portions of Clarksburg, up 355. A305 was a two-lane divided. Actually, it's going to be a four-lane divided, I believe, through that project. Same applicant as we have here. That applicant, this applicant is proffering to join in and participate in the construction of A305. And I do believe Mr. Welke's final role with park and planning is to nod that he has tacitly approved this, and will be, transportation planning staff will review that fully as part of the preliminary plan review.
Will he be here to enforce it?
I think
he will be here occasionally to explain to us why it actually needs to be ameliorated a little bit in light of subsequent conditions.
But again, I think it's important to note that this applicant is offering to do that. We are not requiring that be done. We do have some issues with compatibility. Note the relative location of these proposed units here with the Ruby Drive existing units. Our site plan staff has asked that we identify this as a potential area where they're going to address compatibility as part of the specifically through the site plan. We do have a water quality plan, which is under review, I believe, by DPS. Preliminary stage here. They have asked us to not set anything in stone as part of this pre-application because water quality plans, as you know, have extraordinary measures associated with them, and we may need to move some lots around.
Let me go back to number three.
Yes.
Don't they back up to one another?
They do back up to one another.
So the issue is really a is a issue from the sky.
Well, right here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 existing units. And we do have 1, 2, 3, 4. We do have 5.
Right.
We are a bit narrower. We're going to talk a little bit about a re-subdivision in a minute.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Environmental planning staff will be looking for an environmentally sensitive sewer connection, which at this stage is a little premature. The actual way that this property will be served with sewer will come later at the preliminary plan stage. At this point, we do have one lot that has a waiver of frontage, or will require a waiver of frontage at preliminary. But
which one is that?
That would be a single lot, 15, down here.
And
which only has frontage on an alleyway, a private alley.
Oh.
Again, we're probably going to be looking at some revisions to this plan that may not be, and the applicant has expressed some desire to move that lot around to possibly get it fronting on a public right-of-way.
There you go.
again, condition 7, we do support single family nature of the frontage on 355. We do have some road widening which will need to be worked out with the State Highway Administration, and again, the new alignment with West Old Baltimore at the intersection of 355 will need to be coordinated. We will also need to do a portion of an abandonment of a portion of the West Old Baltimore right of way, which will now be in residential lots. So we will take that as part of the preliminary plan. And the master plan has some specific recommendations regarding pedestrian and bikeway linkages, and as you know, at the time of the site plan, we will nail those down. Let's talk a little bit about a re-subdivision here. Now, this is somewhat of an oddity. We do have recorded lots here, and of course, the Hurley Ridge subdivision. For this property, in red, 1, 2, 3 recorded lots, the remainder, the majority of the remainder of this property, actually there's another recorded lot, actually this map misses this one recorded lot here, okay, so we do need to make that correction on the record. This lot here should be in red, another recorded lot. The remainder of the property are parcels, so we kind of have a hybrid re-subdivision here. Some of it's been recorded, some of it hasn't. This is coming under the MPDU standards. We have an abutting subdivision which was developed under strict R200 standards, half-acre lots. And under the MPDU standards, we can go down to 6,000 square foot lots.
Mm-hmm.
We have Hurley Ridge here, which was a TDR property. A little bit different from what we're looking at here, but again, we have more similarity between the lot shapes and sizes. So I guess what we are asking you is for a little insight and thought as to where, what kind of neighborhood we would like to, where would you like to have staff go with this? Certainly 355 will be a major highway. It's been planning board practice not to cross major highways with divided median strips, anything more than 4 lanes. We've typically stopped our neighborhood at a major highway and only looked at properties on the same side of the street. But what I can tell you, and given some recent history on the Deer Park re-subdivision, we struggled with a neighborhood there. We had an R90 zone, we had an R200 to the north, and we had, I believe, an R90 MPDU to the south, and we were betwixt and between on how to handle the neighborhood. But what we did note, and what we did take away from that plan, which went for a deferral, was that the board was very interested in lots that abutted adjacent subdivisions, even though they were within a different zone. And we are hopefully coming back to you soon with a revised Deer Park, but we do have a similar situation here where we have the existing homes on Ruby Drive with a 20,000 square foot typical lot size. Yep, we are faced with satisfying some MPDU requirements and fulfilling the zoning that's been set in place here in Clarksburg. So what the direction we are trying to come away with, I think, is that we want to give particular attention to those lots which confront or abut the existing residential neighborhood on Ruby Drive, again, this subdivision here. And we have already identified this strip of homes here as being possibly could take some advantage of some additional setbacks or some possible landscaping. The applicant has talked about some type of a fencing which would provide some additional compatibility here.
I remember that Deer Park case, and that's a little different than this, first of all, because of the number of units that were involved, and it was essentially one street. And by the way, you remember I was in support of what they wanted to do, and I got voted down. So be careful of what you say, hear me say from that standpoint. But I think that it's different enough that a different kind of treatment can occur for them to accomplish the yield that's being proposed to you. And one of the things you mentioned, which is what I was going to ask a question about, and that is, if you do a fencing or any other kind of barrier between the lots, well, then that will, in fact, visually take care of one of the problems right there from that standpoint. But I like the idea of, this is the wrong term, but it's the concept, you're essentially clustering more of the housing on 355 and making that area 355 conforming more to a neighborhood pattern than a lot of 355, and that's sort of serving as a transition going up into the Clarksburg area. So from that standpoint, I would not have a problem with what's being proposed, as long as they do some sort of buffering in order to protect the site from the lots that exist there already.
Well, let's give Mr. Dugan a chance to say.